Hey everybody, before we get into today's episode, I want to take a minute to introduce our latest service called Crowd Insight by Gadgetflow. It's an awesome tool we made to help you get honest feedback for your upcoming crowdfunding project. Some of the big results we've seen include increased conversion rate, finding out why your project isn't performing well, and getting feedback you need from potential backers. So please head over to gadgetflow.com/crowdinsight to check it out today. You can also find a link in this week's show notes. Now, let's get into the episode. Hello world, this is the Gadget Flow Podcast, a show about everything related to products, entrepreneurship, marketing, and crowdfunding. This week, I got to chat with Zach and Thomas of Funded Today, and Funded Today is the largest crowdfunding marketing and consulting company in the world, and they recently came in 27th in the Inc. 5000 of 2018. It's super impressive. We were so excited to get their knowledge of entrepreneurship and crowdfunding and everything that goes into running and scaling a company. So without further ado, we're going to jump into this interview with Zach and Thomas of Funded Today. All right, I am here with Zach and Thomas from Funded Today. Guys, how is it going today?
Doing great. Thanks so much. Thanks for having us on.
It's glad to be here, Alex. Thanks.
Absolutely. We're super, super excited to have you both on today. And you guys run Funded Today. So for maybe our audience who may not know who you guys are or what it is you do, maybe you just explain what Funded Today is and what you do.
Yeah, so we're the largest crowdfunding marketing agency and creative agency. So we do page design, video work for people who are looking at launching a product on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, as well as launch the products and put all the marketing engine behind it. So that includes paid ads, it includes working with press, cross collaborations, and our email list of a few hundred thousand users that we deploy. So anyone's looking to launch a product, kind of across the board, anything you need for that on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, that's what we do.
Awesome. Probably the most exciting thing about us recently is we made the Inc. 500. We were number 27 nationwide and number 2 in Utah. And that was pretty cool.
That's amazing. Congratulations. That's a big deal. 27's really high too.
Oh yeah. We're the largest of all the crowdfunding agencies, marketing or creative or otherwise. I think Agency 2.0 made the list as well, but they were way down there.
Wow. Well, congratulations. That's awesome. So I'm curious how you guys know each other. How did you, start this together? What's your guys' history?
As the cliche goes, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's kind of how it worked with Thomas and I reached out to Thomas several years ago, probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe. Yeah. 6.5 years ago. And I had just asked him about a testimonial that he gave on a product that I was looking to buy. His name popped up and it said he lived in Utah. And I said, who's this Thomas Alvord in Utah? So I found him on Facebook, I believe, added him on Skype. And over the years, we would just talk and chat about business and all kinds of things. And ultimately, that network led to us starting a business together.
Nice. Nice. So I'm really curious what, and I like on this podcast to kind of ask, like, crowdfunding is interesting, and I'm always curious about how it becomes the thing that our guests want to pursue. So what was the thing for you guys, maybe in those conversations, those Skypes, like what about crowdfunding really stuck out to you as the thing you wanted to pursue and become experts at?
And that's the funny story. We never even planned on doing this. It literally was just a side project, a side thing where Zach and I came together on the first campaign. And after that, we were going to part ways, and I was going to go back to my political consulting and marketing, and Zach was going to go back to his company where he helped startups and new businesses getting off the ground. But after our first campaign, somebody else hit us up and said, hey, we saw what you did on this campaign. We need to raise $100,000 more in 100 hours, called the FreeWaves earphones. Mm. And they had a goal of 300,000 and had only raised 170,000. So really, it was like $130,000. In less than a week. And we did some tests and it looked like it was going to work or not work. And we weren't sure. And we literally, if it wasn't for them, there might not be Funded Today, because we both made the money we did on the first campaigns and kind of parted, we're going to part ways. And it was just people asking us again and again, will you do this for us? That finally 6 months, a year in, we realized, oh, you know what? We're going to make this our primary focus. So that's how it started. We never planned to create this. So in a way, it was the market asking us for the product. So we literally had a product market fit. It wasn't something we created thinking this is what people like. People asked us for it again and again. So it just kind of happened.
Right. That's a really cool story. I mean, and there's no better way to validate what you're doing than when you're like, you're not even trying and you keep getting business. That's incredible. Exactly. So it shows that you guys are good at what you do. So, I mean, maybe now, I mean, okay, so zooming, you know, fast forward a little bit, you guys have a huge team that you're working remote all over the world. So maybe, like, can you just explain how big is the team now? How many teammates do you have?
We have about 60 something people working for us now.
Wow, that's incredible.
I should know the exact number, huh?
Yeah, I mean, 60 even. I mean, that's just a lot. That's incredible, guys. So I mean, what has that been like? What has that transition been like from going from, you know, the two of you making things happen and then somehow, you know, growing and scaling to that kind of the size? You know, maybe tell me one of the challenges you guys have faced in that process and how you overcame it.
I think we're different than a lot of people who are business owners, in the sense that Thomas and I don't necessarily have to do anything in our business anymore, which is a good and bad thing. It's good because that's the dream, right? Freedom, residual income, everybody doing things better than you used to be able to do. Mm-hmm. I guess the bad part is that you kind of see your baby getting taken care of by all these other people, and you yeah. don't necessarily have control of it anymore. So it's a double-edged sword for sure, but it's allowed Thomas and I a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different things. We've got a podcast now that's coming out here next few weeks. We're writing a book. We've got a lot of different extracurricular things that we do, both business, private, charitable. So it's been good in that sense that it's allowed us to really do whatever we want with our lives. I mean, we're living the American dream, essentially, you could say.
Yeah.
But it's sad in the sense that here is something that Thomas and I literally started and understood every single process and every little nuance of our business and ran, you know, hundreds of campaigns before we got to a point where we were successfully outsourced completely from our business. So there's a pain to letting go as well. I mean, I think every business owner needs to learn to let go if they ever want to truly have something that's different than a job. Otherwise, I think you're just working for yourself and you're working 80-hour weeks instead of 40-hour weeks.
Right. So,
There's something to be said about that, but
in
the end, I think we're pretty happy with how things turned out. Funded Today is definitely a success story that I personally never could have realized. Thomas has a pretty big vision. Maybe he thought it was going to be as big and successful as it became, but for me, it definitely exceeded all my expectations, and now I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, well, what next? I've never thought we'd get this big. How do we go bigger, or do we want to go bigger, or do we maintain market share? And that's kind of where we're at now. What do we do, or where do we want to go?
Sure. So maybe, I mean, yeah, I hear that totally. And it's funny you say that, because I can only imagine you guys put your, you know, your heart and soul into something for so long, and to see it grow and become successful, and then to really let it go, you know, that's something we haven't really covered on the show before. But I imagine that's a lot harder than it sounds, just talking about it, you know, because you put so much into something. It has to be difficult. I mean, I know you guys are obviously still running everything and overseeing uh-huh. everything, but, you know, the day-to-day stuff that you push forward for so long, working so hard, has to be challenging. But I'm curious, like, the process. Maybe give me a lesson you guys learned in scaling like that, like scaling your organization to that kind of size. Maybe when you were at from, you know, employee number 5 to like 30, that range, like what is that process like for you guys?
For me, interestingly enough, getting the first 5 is the hardest part. Getting new people is actually so easy and nice now because everybody just fits right in. We have the right managers. We have the right people. Our system is pretty brilliant now, so it's actually easy to add new people.
We've created a system, I think, as part of it. When we hire somebody, we do things on the fly. We know what we're doing. We innovate. But as you're building something, you need to create a system and structure, because not everyone you're bringing on are entrepreneurs like yourself, mm-hmm. right? And they want to literally be told what to do, not like in a bossed around way, but in a structured way. Otherwise, they feel lost. And I understand this, right? Because Zach and I are running this company. We make the decisions. And I remember just about 8 years ago, I was with another company that my brothers had started. And in a way where you're not the final decision maker, you have to kind of have some deference, right? And hey, is this how you want it? Do you want it like this? But when you're the decision maker, you make those decisions. So as we brought people on and hired people, again, you have to create a system, right? And a lot of it, we're building new divisions or doing new things. So there's not a lot of structure or, hey, here's how, like, really, I think our most painful growing experience was how we handle situations that weren't anticipated in terms of compensation. Because 90% of the people at Funded Today are all commission-based. So our salespeople, our PR people, our paid media people, they're all our video division, our page design division. They're all
we structured it that way because we wanted everybody to focus strictly on our clients. We knew that if we paid our people really well, but we only paid them really well if they do well for our clients, it would just create this beautiful business that became Funded Today. And it worked out great. But like Thomas said, because of that structure, there's a lot of competition. And sometimes it's hard to keep the camaraderie up among all the different divisions that Funded Today, and everybody will compete internally. But then unanticipated situations come up, and because they've never been anticipated or never been discussed before, then you run into issues where you have to talk it over with the team. And a lot of times they're like, well, I thought it was this way. Well, it's this way. Well, what are we going to do? And then you run into all kinds of perspective issues where it's he said, she said, or what was said, and how do you address that, and what do we do from here, right, Thomas?
Right. Yeah, exactly. For example, hey, sales team or marketing team, you're going to get X percent of the sale or X percent of what your marketing raise is. Well, then what happens if the client doesn't pay? Do they get paid or do they not get paid? Mm. Well, what if it's a huge client? What if we've lost $50,000 on ads because the client isn't paying us? Do we just take the hit? Do they take the hit? Okay, well, what if they don't get paid because we're not getting paid, but then what if they later do pay us?
Right.
Then how much? Well, what if they only pay us a percentage, right? Those are things we had never anticipated.
Wow, yeah.
So we structured contracts, and then things arose, and it's like, oh, man, we should have thought of – well, again, you can't think of those things. You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
But those are things you have to be flexible, and I think in our experience – with some growing pains, I think you want to defer to the contractor, to the employee, give them the benefit and say, hey, moving forward, here's how we're going to do it. Yeah. Right?
Otherwise, every time we've said, well, this happened and we're going to do this, they're like, no. But every time we've said this happened and that's okay, we're still going to do this. But going forward, we're going to do this. We've had a lot better feedback
sure,
from our company.
Yeah.
And I think the easiest thing that we've done to clean things up in the future is because everything in our business is completely digital, essentially. I mean, we don't really have offices. We have people all over the world. Most of our people in the United States, and I'd say maybe 50% are even in Utah, but still we have people all over the place. So what we've done, and we learned this really just in the last few years, and it's funny, like I am a serial entrepreneur. I've never had a normal job my whole life, but the more I've become a serial entrepreneur, the more I've fallen into bureaucracy.
Right.
It's funny I say that because you would never think I'm the one that likes systems and processes and all this stuff, but I've actually fallen in love with all that stuff, and I see why these big companies have all the stuff that they have. It's just necessary. So what we've done, bureaucratically speaking, is anytime something substantial gets changed, we send a memo out. And it's just a really nice memo. If it goes to our client specialist, we would call it DSM9, Client Specialist Memo 9. And we'd send it out, and it would go out to all our client specialists, and it would clarify something. And then from that point forward, we've said memos dictate law. Memos dictate policy changes. And people understand that. That way we can have conversations on Skype or email or text or phone, but those are just conversations.
Yeah. And let me share one other thing too. Actually, two ideas about this, right? And it's a great question. Most people usually don't ask us about this, but one principle everyone should always remember: your greatest enemies always come internally.
Yep.
And that is because they know the inner workings inside and out. And yeah, it applies to like everything, right? Like divorce. Like if someone gets divorced, like your greatest enemy. Often, I see these people who get divorced, and it's like, you know, just head to head, so much friction and emotion, right? But with business, if you look at so many people in the business world, like Amazon and Jet.com, right? Jet.com was founded by former Amazon employee executive, right? And I could go on and on with so many companies.
Tinder and Bumble, if you're in the dating world.
Yep. There's so many. And so we had issues where one of our first hires went and took our assets and started competing. We recently resolved that and had a settlement and won and everything. But basically, I know other, so again, just so many companies where that happens, and it's often the first hire. And I think it in part has to do with the first hire feels like they work hard for you. They often know all of the inner workings, and they often know what your profit margin is, your net profit, and how much you're making. And they're like, why am I doing this? I see how I can run everything. And any business at its core is super easy if you know how to do everything. Anything is easy if you know how to do it. And so when you have those first hires where you're not compartmentalized and you don't have divisions and you have one person who sees the whole process, it's so easy. So do two things. You got to make sure you treat them well, make sure they're valued, and be careful who you hire and protect those assets. And again, you don't expect it's going to happen, but invariably it seems to happen so, so frequently.
Right.
Another tidbit of advice when you're expanding and growing outside of just yourself.
Totally. I think that's so, so cool to hear you guys talk about too, because that's something I haven't, we haven't really heard much of on the show is that challenge of growth and like the human side of growth. You know, oftentimes I just hear like the really great parts of it, but those are very real challenges that come with just working with other people. You know what I mean? And so I appreciate you guys talking about that. And I think it's really wise advice as well. When it comes to growing and scaling, like you have to think about that stuff, and you also have to be ready for all those things that are going to come up that you're not expecting. Like you said, it's what part of any of that could you guys have planned for? Not much, unless someone.
And I think it's important, Alex, too, to note that as much as I don't like legal stuff, you need to get really legal if there are issues that come up. Mm. Make sure all of your people are signing contracts. Enforce non-competes. We've been fortunate enough to win every single lawsuit that we've ever sued in. And it's not like we sue all the time, but we need to protect our trademark. We have competitors that go and use the name Funded Today because we're the biggest agency in the world and our name's popular all over the place. So they'll put their name in our ad or they'll put their name on our website. And, you know, like get Funded Today with Agency 2.0 or whoever else, you know, people will say things like that. And you can't do that. And I think it's important to protect yourself as much as possible. And again, this is a different Zach talking here. If you talked to me 5 or 6 years ago, I would be like, just go for it, fail fast, break things, you know, the whole Facebook model. But even Mark Zuckerberg's learned that he needs to change his tone there as well. And I think I'm the same way. Mm. You need to be more methodical. You need to be more systematic. You need to be more process oriented. You need to clean things up as much as possible along the way, because ultimately, if you don't, those things are going to come back to hurt you. And the more prior planning that you have in place, the less likely those problems will be issues for you long term. And that's what happened with us. We had so many good things in place because of all the businesses that Thomas and I had ran before Funded Today, that when we did run into issues with people competing with us or having to fire people or different things like that, while it took years to resolve, we were able to win them all because we had all of the right processes and things in place to protect our assets and to protect ourselves long term.
Yeah. No, that's great advice, guys. So I kind of want to shift.
Could I share one more thought, which I thought was so beautiful? And this would be for companies that are larger. I was once asked on another podcast where I like to learn and where I get, you know, my information, my learning from. And I like to buy a lot of books, but for me, I love Forbes. Zach knows I love Forbes. Whenever we fly, I always have my Forbes magazine with me. But
he put a funny story. He always puts it in the seat compartment, and then I used to be like, what the heck, why does every time I fly with you there's a Forbes magazine in the, but it's always him, and he does it as a joke now, so he always puts a bunch of Forbes magazines in all the seat cushions of the
room. That's awesome.
But so this most recent edition, and Forbes is not paying me to say this, of course, but there was an article on Jeff Bezos, right? And that's why I love these articles, because it shows some of the brightest minds and what they're doing now, like right now, right? In our day. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about scale. And he shares that in his, right, that's so big that they have, I don't know if they call it a yes policy. Somebody could pick up the latest edition. But basically how he says, we want to be a yes, like a, not a yes, man. I forget the exact phrase, but say yes to like everything. Right. So if there's somebody at Amazon who has an idea that they can go to their boss, but if it's not their boss, they could go to somebody else or go to their boss's boss and get approval. Right. So that way, if there's a good idea that if their boss doesn't like it, you know, traditionally it's like, okay, somebody has an idea, their boss needs to approve it, their boss's boss, and then maybe some committee, and then it can see the light of day, right? So there's so many places where it can just get shut down. But the idea is, if it's something new, if it's something innovative horizontally within what they're currently doing, right, some improvement, some new efficiency, whatever, that's like, yes, let's go test it out. And you can find some director or some boss that would give you that authorization to go do it. So you have that leeway, right? They want to make it really easy to go do new things. And so they try to spur innovation and allow their company to continue to grow, right? So it's not coming top down. It can come organically within the company. So that's actually what they do horizontally, but then vertically, right? If it's a new industry, if it's a new niche, if it's something where they're expanding horizontally, then what did Jeff Bezos said? He says he's the slow things down executive. And basically they look at it and they say, you know, how scalable is this? How big is this market? Well, the first thing they said, is this a Me Too offering? If it's a Me Too offering, we're not even going to look at it. We're not even going to touch it. We don't want to be a Me Too. We want to create things that are innovative, right? And then the second thing is, how scalable is this, right? You know, if they're only going to be making, you know, $10 million a year from it, it's not worth their time, right? Because they're doing billions of dollars.
Right.
And the third point is a few days ago I read, I can't remember the third point, but it's interesting, right? Depending on the size of a company, your culture and your process is going to be different. And recently I was talking to a consultant and he was saying, what has been your process for your strategy for deciding how you grow or not grow? And really we don't have one. And I think a startup usually isn't going to have one. You're kind of dabbling in different things. Hey, does this work? No. Does this work? No. Because you don't really have a benchmark to say, hey, the market needs to be this size or things like that for it to make sense for us to put our resources into it. You're kind of just dabbling around. But then as you start growing, you need to make more strategic decisions, right? If there's something that Zach and I could do that would make us an extra $50,000 a year, right, for the company, we'd probably look at it and say, no, we're not going to do that. But for somebody who's just starting up and they're getting on, you know, just getting on their feet, that might makes sense, right? So
again, well, it's funny you mentioned that because Jeff Bezos has a policy at Amazon, and we've learned this from some of the top executives at Amazon that we've had a chance to work with because of some of the Amazon marketing that we do nowadays and because of some of the connections that we have. We've learned that if they do not start a new business unless it has $1 billion potential. So like Thomas said, for us, if it's $50,000, that's a great amount of money for a small business, and some people could live off that. But for us, we would say, well, that's only got the potential to do $50,000. We're not going to do it.
Right.
Now, maybe if it was $500,000 a year, that's probably our number now. If this could make us $500,000 more a year, then we would look into doing it. And I think it's important to realize those changes come in shifts. You might start out, what can I do $10,000, then $50,000, then $100,000, and then your number becomes $1 million, and then one day you're Amazon and the number becomes $1 billion. You have to make decisions like that. Otherwise, you can't grow. And I see why Amazon thinks they have stockholders and shareholders to please and other things like that. And if they're doing something that's going to add $1 million a year, we would think, yeah, that's amazing for them. That's a rounding error. So,
right. Absolutely. That's really, really insightful, guys. That's cool. So I know I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I do want to maybe ask like two more questions. And the first would be, can you guys give me maybe one success story, maybe one campaign that really stands out to you guys as like the turning point, maybe one of those that you picked up while you were still, you know, you hadn't even decided to go full time into this, but maybe that moment that was pivotal that you guys decided, wow, this could really be a huge business and we should go all in on Funded Today. Do you have an example you could share?
Yeah, I would say our first campaign was a wallet that Zach was consulting with, and he brought me on. We ran ads and parted ways. That was our first campaign. But I think it was really, for me, our next two campaigns, our second and third campaign. I believe it was our third campaign. But the second campaign I already talked about, where we raised another $100,000 in under 100 hours. And it was like, wow, we just have we now have a $20,000 invoice for 5 days of work. Like, this was incredible, right? And even then, at that point, it was like, man, this is interesting. We didn't know if we could repeat it, right? Like, was it just kind of a fluke? Was it different? But then we were working on, it was actually another wallet called the Basics Wallet. And I think it was a $60,000 invoice. And I remember talking to Zach, and it's like, man, that was like $60,000. Do you think we could do this like again and again? Or do you think we could scale this so we're doing this times 10? And I one other campaign I'd also mentioned is actually FreeWaves, because this was happening in around October of 2014. And I remember thinking, man, wouldn't that be crazy to have a $1 million campaign? And just 2 months later, we had our first $1 million campaign, which was, I'm drawing a blank here. You have to help me, Zach. I don't know why.
Was it Trunkster?
Trunkster, yeah. And we had now we have, I don't know, like $50 million campaigns we've worked on, right? So it's just, hey, we had another $1 million campaign.
Well, it was, let's have a $1 million month, and let's try to have a $1 million day. And I think we've hit all those.
But I think when we had those campaigns where it's like, man, here's a process we weren't even planning to create. It just kind of happened. And we realized, man, we're onto something. And it's kind of funny because Zach and I were both like, hey, do we work with each other? Because I was the marketing person. So I'm like, I don't need Zach. And Zach's like, well, I have these business connections. I could just do this. I don't need Thomas. But, you know, we work together and you know, it's worked out.
There's something to be said about partnerships too. I don't recommend a partnership with more than three people. Two's been amazing, really, for the most part. I mean, sometimes maybe it would be good to have one more person, but I see a lot of these businesses and they're like, I got six or seven partners. And it's like,
it's crazy. Yeah.
Man, I don't understand how you guys, are y'all going to make 10 grand a year? Or you get a business? Or it can work. Don't get me wrong. Again, it's probably me not making my mindset big enough to see how all these partners come into play. But what we've found, and we've worked with, I think, nearly 3,000 businesses now, all those that have these 7, 8, 9, 10, even 5, 6, 7 founders, they just don't seem to do well. Eventually, they team up against each other. It's 3 against 2. It's 4 against 3. It's 6 against 4. And they fight, and they say, well, he's not doing this, and he's not doing that. With Thomas and I, it's kind of the buck stops here. I got to do my job, and Thomas has to do his job. And sometimes we pick up the slack for the other. And most of the time, it works out okay.
Yeah.
And it's important to do that. And it's important to trust your partner, too. I've had a lot of bad partnerships and really a few good ones. And that's kind of how it is. And fortunately, this one's been really good and others have been bad, or they've been good and they turn bad. So I would give one bit of advice to anybody listening to this who's starting a business. Go into the business with a long-term mindset. When you make $1 million in a day, don't take the money out and split it $500,000 and bounce or raid the checking account or whatever. I've seen this happen. I'm telling you this because a lot of people are like, yeah, we did it. We got $1 million or even $100,000 or whatever it is. Don't think like that. If Thomas and I would have thought like that, we would have lost out on the tens of millions that we've made and made a few million and been done. And I've seen my other businesses sabotage that way with other business partners that thought like that because that you work so hard and you make no money. And it might be a year or 2 years and suddenly you're rich, you're whatever, you know, and you're like, I've got all this money. And then you just kill a good thing.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to do that. And Thomas and I have been smart in that sense that we fully capitalized our business and we could have this thing run for 10 years probably without ever earning another dollar, you know?
Right. I'm curious to hear you guys, maybe this can probably be the last question, but I want to hear what you guys have to say about maybe choosing a good partner. I know you're talking about how important it is to find a good partner and cultivate that relationship, but I also am curious, how can you make that a reality? Like, what's something you should look for?
I can speak to this point pretty good, and then I'll let Thomas go. The easiest thing for me is you want to find someone different than you. If you get two people thinking the same, it's a problem. But you also don't want someone to be way too different. I've had partners in the past that are different than me in the sense that maybe one is a good coder and I'm a good marketer, salesperson. That's okay. But I think what has worked out really well with Thomas and I is we see eye to eye on the marketing and sales side of things for the most part. But Thomas is a visionary. He's kind of, I mean, just picture like a Steve Jobs. And I'm more of a systems, okay, Thomas, you got this big vision. Now how the frick do we make it happen kind of guy. That's yeah. the easiest kind of thing. And I'll set him straight. And sometimes he'll be like, Zach, shut up, man. You got to have a vision. We got to get bigger. We got to grow. We got to do this. Right. And then he'll sell me on his point. And we'll yell and argue and scream even sometimes. But it's fine because we realize that the other is balancing the other out. I mean, like Thomas said, we wouldn't have started Fund of the Day if it weren't for that first time when I reached out to Thomas and said, try this out. And then the second time when Thomas decided to basically take his dad's credit card and put $100,000 on it over 100 hours and raise a bunch of money for a campaign. Like, that's the visionary in him. And me is like, just give me like $4,000 for the referral fee and we'll call it good.
Yeah, we didn't share that story. Like, literally, the client was only going to pay us if we hit the goal. So there was a big risk we wouldn't. And all of that credit card debt would be on us. And at that time, I was doing political stuff and I had a client. Political clients are funny to work with. And I ended up getting paid. But at the time, I had like $50,000, $45,000 in debt on my dad's credit card. And Zach didn't want to take the plunge, even though he was in a financially sound position to do so. So I was the one who took that risk, right? So that's kind of me. We balance each other out.
Wow.
But in terms of what I would say, first, I would say choose a partner who's been successful or looks like they're going to be successful, right? I looking back, I put some money in some other ventures where it's people who like have struggled their whole life, right? And they don't have any like skill set they're bringing to the table. It's like just the idea.
Well, ready for this? Ready for this?
Going to be the manager. And never partner with someone just because they have the idea or they're going to be the manager. They need some skills where they're actually going to be driving the business forward. Otherwise, it's like straight up dead weight. So,
and why start a business right off the bat? Thomas and I ran 10, 11 campaigns, maybe. It might have even been more. We were like literally testing each other out. And like Thomas shared, why do I need Zach? Like he shared with me, why do I need Thomas? Those thought into our mind a bunch of times until we realized we've got some synergy here. We didn't start a business. We made probably $1 million before we went back and backdated everything and turned it into an LLC.
That's so cool. That's such a unique way.
I'll share one other
thing. I always say that. I have so many people come to me, and sorry to cut you off, Thomas, but I have so many people come to me and they say, Zach, come on, man. I got this amazing idea. Sign this NDA. Do this, do that. I'm like, come on, man. Let's just figure it out. Let's launch this thing. Let's see what happens. Let's get going. Let's make some money, and we can always figure some stuff out in the end. And maybe I'm wrong there, you know, like, well, you got to get a pet and you got to do this. I just feel like I'm not wrong. I feel like if you want to test somebody out, if you want to try something out, there is never a rush to formalize it all and make it all legal. You can clean it up a month later, 3 months later, even a year later.
Yeah.
If things seem like they make sense, like test the waters. You're about to marry somebody for life sometimes. Mm-hmm. Thomas and I have been doing this for 10 years, and it looks like it'll go for 5 more, you know?
Yeah, and so, one last thing, which is interesting, right? In terms of choosing a partner, what's more important than choosing a partner is actually choosing the right product market fit. Zach and I on one of our podcasts that will be going live soon on the Fund of Today podcast, we talked about this, how the research shows, and Andreessen Horowitz, the VC firm, you know, Mark Andreessen behind it.
Andreessen.
Yeah. Andreessen, sorry. I always mispronounce his name. Andreessen, thank you, Zach. He gave a presentation at Stanford, and he said, what's more important, the team, the product, or what was the other one?
The market. Yeah, the market.
And he said, the market, hands down, and we knew this, and the podcast goes over a whole bunch of stuff, but basically it's the market that matters more. You could have the most amazing team, but guess what? If there's no market for your idea, for your product, for your service, no one's going to buy it. So who cares what the team is, right?
You're going to get the exceptions to the rule, but by and large, market trumps all. It doesn't. Everybody spends so much time like, we got the best team. We got all this talent. We recruited from the Ivy Leagues. We did this. We did that. Give me the worst team ever and the best market ever, and I'll make more money than the best team ever 100% of the time.
Wow. That's so good, guys. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for today. But I mean, do you guys have any maybe closing thoughts, like a quick thought for maybe someone who's considering starting a campaign, or maybe how people can get started working with Funded today? How, what would you guys suggest?
Yeah, Zach, getting started with Funded today. Here's my thought. You should be faster at launching your product, and you should also be slower. It's kind of a paradox. You should be faster in pursuing it, right? If you have an idea, man, don't just let it keep sitting there and you do nothing. And 10 years later, I got this idea I'm going to do. You know what? You're never going to. So you're going to do it. Just start doing it right now, right? But then also, don't just jump into it. I like to say, come up with 10 ideas first. Talk with others. See what their response is. And also, as you're building it, get people to say, hey, if you build this, I'll back it when you launch on Kickstarter. If you do those type of things, then you're going to be more successful. But you got to pursue your idea or stop thinking about an idea. That's what I would say.
Love it.
And that goes hand in hand with where I want to go. We talk about this all the time. Fail fast. People get so sad when their idea dies, and I'm happy because now you can figure out another one. You have to sometimes go through 5 or 6 ideas. I mean, like Thomas said, I was pretty financially well off before Funded Today because of some other businesses that had succeeded, but Funded Today ended up becoming more successful than them all. If I wouldn't have pivoted and moved on to other businesses, my situation was really unique. I was already in some pretty good businesses making good money, but I basically got rid of them all over the years as I became more and more invested into Funded Today, because Funded Today presented such a greater opportunity. And it's like Thomas said, I went in it fast. We went and figured it out really quickly, and we found that it could make money. But then we went in it slow, in the sense that we didn't get all diehard and gung-ho and quit everything we were doing before we made sure that this was actually not just some crazy fluke, you know?
Right.
So I would give that advice. And then managerially speaking, I'd give this advice, and I say this all the time. Our people at Funded Today probably hate me, but I say it so much, and I'm going to say it one more time to everybody here. Perspective is a private audience. I see this so many times. We have 7 or 8 different visions at Funded Today now for all the different things that we do.
We just had this happen today.
Oh, geez, yeah. I mean, Thomas saw it firsthand, and I think in the end, I resolved it pretty well, right?
I believe so. No, I thought you resolved it really well.
Yeah, everybody was happy. So I'll just tell the story. That's the best way to describe it. So we have a lot of work coming in for creative now. Pretty much, I'd say 50% of our work are people who are hiring us to do their videos and their page designs and all the stuff getting ready to launch a new idea, which is great. It's amazing, right? But everybody's getting mad at Funded Today. The salespeople are like, we need to get it done quicker. And the page designers and our specialists and our videographers and our pretty much everybody, our sound guys, our editing guys, our mixers, our masters, everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Slow it down.
Yeah.
And it's a great problem to have. And ultimately, I help them see each other's perspectives. Look, guys, these guys, the salespeople, are not mad at you. They're mad at the process. So let's talk to them about the process and what time we do here. And can you understand why the salespeople are frustrated? And salespeople, can you guys see what's going on here? These guys aren't complaining about sending them tons of work. That's great. They're happy. They love it. They're complaining because they want to make sure the quality remains the Funded Today way, so that it's amazing, so that we can continue to raise millions of dollars for all these clients. And it's crazy, right? You would think this wouldn't be a problem, but it was a problem that ultimately was getting into some shouting earlier on our management call today. And in the end, everybody was I even said that. I'm like, guys, perspective is a private experience. Let's see if we can understand where the creative team's coming from. Let's see if we can understand where the sales division's coming from. And let's see if there's some kind of happy medium. And in the end, we set some rules. We said, okay, any new creative work that comes in, we're going to guarantee a 30-day turnaround. Before, we were guaranteeing a 14-day, but because of how much work we have now, if someone were to hire us today, we would guarantee we could launch them by the 28th of October. And that made the salespeople happy because now they have a timeline. Now the creative people understand that they've got 30 days to get things done so they can still provide great quality, but they don't feel rushed and stressed out by the sales team always yelling at them to get hitting deadlines that are unmanageable and unreachable based upon our current workload. And it's just, we see this all the time. And usually what gets people to stop yelling and screaming is, hey guys, perspective is a private experience. What this person feels is real. What this division feels is real. What's actually real is probably somewhere in the middle. Let's see if we can figure that out real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, I appreciate you both so much for being on. You gave us a ton of insight into what it's like to run and scale and deal with people while running a huge organization or a company. And so I just appreciate both of your time so much. And
this was a different podcast, Alex. I appreciate a lot of different questions asked, and it was fun to talk about some things we don't normally talk about. So
yeah, thanks for having us on. You're great at running a podcast, so thanks to you.
Awesome, guys. Well, we look forward to sharing the episode with our audience, and everyone make sure to go check out Funded Today and everything they're up to. Guys, thank you so much for being on this week.
Thanks again.
Yeah, we'll see you.
That was my interview with Zach and Thomas of Funded Today. So please make sure to check out everything they're doing at Funded Today and connect with them to get help with your next campaign. Thank you so much for being on today, guys. This podcast is made by Gadget Flow, and we're proud to be the number one platform to find new and awesome gadgets. So make sure to check out our site for all the new products we're curating every single day. We'll be back next week with another new episode, so in the meantime, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Until next time, thank you so much for listening to the Gadget Flow podcast.